What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to six guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Same old story. Boy finds girl, boy loses girl, girl finds boy. Boy forgets girl, boy remembers girl. And girl dies in a tragic blimp accident over the Orange Bowl on New Year's Day.
Good year?
No, the worst.
Something tells me I'm into something good.
Cuban?
No, Dutch Irish. My father was from Wales.
Can I interest you in a nightcap?
No, thank you. I don't wear them.
Yes, he's in the intensive care ward at Our Lady of the Worthless Miracle.
Hey, look at that. The missing evidence in the Kellner case. My God, he was innocent.
It's true what they say. Cops and women don't mix. It's like eating a spoonful of Drano. Sure, it'll clean you out. It'll leave you hollow inside.
Yes, well, when I see five weirdos dressed in togas stabbing a guy in the middle of the park in full view of 100 people, I shoot the bastards. That's my policy.
That was a Shakespeare in the Park production of Julius Caesar, you moron.
Something tells me I'm into something good. I'm into something good. Oh, yeah, something good.
By the way, I faked every orgasm.
Hello, and welcome to Who Will Save Generation X, the trivia game show that is dedicated to remembering, celebrating, and preserving all the wonderful qualities of Generation X through games, trivia, and friends. I'm Zabe, the host of the show, and I'm very excited to be back with our third format of the show that we've added to the program. It's a shorter version of the podcast that we can release in between regular episodes of the show, where it's just you, the listeners, versus the podcast to see how many points you can get. No prizes or ranks, just a quick mini game to satisfy that nostalgic itch for the pop culture of Generation X. Here's how the game works. We will have three fast-paced rounds of games to play and score points. In round three, we have a special guest host take over the show to quiz me for five questions. If you can get more questions correct than I can, then you are invited to use our website answering machine system and mock me endlessly.
Count on it, pee-drinking crap face!
Yeah. Thanks for that example, judges. I think the listeners know how to make fun of people just fine without your help. Anyway, you could also use that answering machine to call in and take over as host for a moment and ask me five trivia questions that we can use on an upcoming episode. Just go to our website at whowillsavegenx.com and click on that blue microphone icon in the lower right part of your screen and leave us some trivia questions. It's 100% free to use, and it can be accessed by any device that has an internet connection and a microphone. We would love to hear your voice on the show. So let's get going and save Generation X from being forgotten as we play this episode of The Challenging Stage.
Round one.
We have not played this game all year, so let's change that right now by playing a game that we call Second Guessing. Judges, play that theme song.
Just a snip will make you think. Who's that artist in a blink? Play it twice, that tiny bit. Second guessing, this is it. Hey! Second guessing, only 1 second is all that you get. Second guessing, name the song and band from this little bit. Hey! Hey!
Here's how we play. I will play 1 second of a popular song from Generation X, and you must guess the title and artist of the song. The judges have selected a recognizable 1 second clip of some part of a song for you to listen to. So it's not necessarily the first second of the song, but it could be. There are 3 songs in total, and you'll be awarded 1 point for artist and 1 point for title, for a total of 6 points available in the round. We'll play the clip twice and then reveal the answers at the end of the round. Let's start off with something really easy and get more difficult as we play. Song 1 is from 1989, and it is a soft rock song according to Wikipedia. Artist and title of this hit song that you've heard a million times. One more time. Here's a hint. The song is from 1989, but most of us didn't hear it until it was featured in a David Lynch movie, after which the video was on heavy rotation on MTV. Here's a last listen. While you think about that one, here's song number 2. Song 2 was from 1984. It is listed as a dance rock, pop, synth rock song. That last one is debatable to me, but who am I to argue with Google? Here's your first listen. Does that sound familiar? Here's another listen to that 1 second clip. You know it, don't you? Yeah, you know it. Here's a hint. The song was so popular on MTV that eventually all of us saw one of our friends dancing to this one. Here's a last listen, and then we'll move on to the final song in the round. And finally, song 3 is from 1989. It is listed as a glam metal song, according to Google. But let's be honest, in 1989, if you called something glam metal, you probably meant that it was a hair metal song, and this one surely fits the bill. Artist and title of this song right here. Here's your second listen. You want a hint? Yeah, I thought so. Here's a hint. The song is about a near-death experience by one of the band members, and it has been played in strip clubs ever since. I mean, so I'm told, that is. I've certainly never heard it in a strip club. Wait, that came out wrong. I would have to have visited a strip club to even know whether or not they play it in strip clubs, right? Which I do not. Okay, despite me saying that they play it in strip clubs, I think it's a safe bet to assume that's the case, right? I mean, how would I even know? Look, I know how that sounds, but I'm just saying that's what people tell me. Not that I hang out with dudes who go to strip clubs all the time or anything. All right, let's just throw out the whole strip club bit, because I don't think you're understanding what I'm trying to say here and are just thinking about me being a strip club guy, which I'm not. Let me make that clear right now. Let's just stick to the important part of what this is, which is... You know, I don't even remember anymore. Judges, play this clip one last time and let's move on to the answers. Here's your last listen. Okay, let's reveal the answers now. Song 1 is Wicked Game by Chris Isaak. Chris Isaak's Wicked Game is one of those songs that somehow makes you feel like you're starring in your own moody black and white romance, even if you're just eating a bowl of cereal in your pajamas. Originally tucked away in his 1989 album Wild Shape World, it only became a hit after director David Lynch used it in the 1990 film Wild at Heart. But the real scene stealer? The steamy slow-motion beach music video featuring Isaak and supermodel Helena Christensen rolling around in the sand like two people who have no idea of the price that they're going to have to pay to the chafing gods later. Bonus fun fact, Isaak has joked that the biggest challenge during filming wasn't looking smoldering. It was trying not to get sunburned in very awkward places. The result is a song and video that somehow manages to be both heartbreaking and, let's be honest, a little distracting. Song 2 is Bruce Springsteen's Dancing in the Dark. See, I told you you'd know this one. Bruce Springsteen's Dancing in the Dark is proof that even the boss can have a bad day. He famously wrote it after his manager told him that he didn't think there was a single hit on his Born in the USA album, and he needed to get some work on that. Bruce grumpily cranked out Dancing in the Dark overnight. The song became one of his biggest smashes, thanks in part to the iconic music video where a baby-faced Courtney Cox gets pulled up on stage to awkwardly, yet endearingly, dance with him. Springsteen admits that he's not exactly a trained dancer, so the moves you see are about 90% winging it and 10% not trying to trip over his microphone cord. It is the ultimate reminder that sometimes you can turn frustration, awkward shuffling, and a random girl from the audience into pure rock and roll magic. And finally, here's song 3. The reveal on this one is a little long, but if I cut it any shorter, you might miss the part of the story of the song. To quickly bring you up to speed, imagine several woes, and yas leading up to this moment right here. Okay. Here it comes. Almost there. Wait for it. Pure poetry. The correct answer, of course, is Motley Crue's Kickstart My Heart. Kickstart My Heart isn't just a song. It's a full-blown adrenaline shot straight through the sternum set to guitar riffs that even Quentin Tarantino would be jealous of. Inspired by Nikki Sixx's real-life Oops, I Overdosed and Technically Died moment, the track is basically the sound of cheating the Grim Reaper and then flooring it down the 101 freeway at 150 miles an hour. The whole thing is a pedal to the metal rush, and just when you think it's over, Vince Neil gives us a series of oh yeah, whoa yeah, like he's some sort of stuttering Kool-Aid man.
Oh yeah!
It fades out with the band still revving like a pack of coked-up Harley-Davidson engines, making you wonder if the song actually ended, or if they're still out there, somewhere, screaming whoa yas as they ride out into the sunset towards infinity. Okay, let's move on to round two.
Round two.
Round two of this episode is our spotlight trivia round. We will dive into one Gen X topic to quiz you on. Each complete correct answer is worth 2 points if you know the answer outright, but if you need a hint or the multiple choice, then it is worth only 1 point. I'll ask the questions and then circle back with the answers at the end of the round. Good luck! The spotlight topic this episode asks you, if subtle humor is your thing, the Naked Gun is here to steamroll it, run it over twice, and then have the USC marching band stomp all over it for good measure. Released in 1988, The Naked Gun is a slapstick masterpiece from the creators of Airplane that follows the gloriously clueless Lieutenant Frank Drebin as he stumbles, bumbles, and gives us cinema's greatest portrayal of a Major League umpire ever put on film on his way to end a plot to assassinate the Queen of England. It's part cop drama, part love story, and 100% an excuse to cram as many sight gags, puns, and absurd one-liners as possible, often in the same shot. In the 80s, the humor of this movie served as a litmus test to see who you wanted to be friends with. If they didn't laugh at this movie, then you probably didn't need them as a friend. We didn't need that kind of negativity in our lives. And then there's OJ! Simpson played Officer Norberg, whose big contribution is spending most of the film in a hospital bed after a pratfall-heavy opening sequence that now plays like the most unintentionally prophetic career foreshadowing in movie history. In hindsight, the idea of OJ as a lovable, accident-prone sidekick is, well, let's just say, time has added layers. But make no mistake, this is Leslie Nielsen's show, and his deadpan delivery turns every ridiculous moment into pure comedic gold. The Naked Gun isn't just a funny movie. It's a laugh-a-second masterclass that still sets the bar for how outrageous, clever, and endlessly rewatchable parody can be. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Naked Gun.
Question number one.
The movie is based on the short-lived TV series called Police Squad. Each episode opened with action, gunplay, and announcing a famous guest star who died during that announcement and was never seen again in the episode. It's hilarious. There are full episodes available online. If you haven't ever checked out this show, you really should. If you like this kind of humor. And if you didn't, you probably wouldn't be listening to this podcast. Where do you think we learned our ridiculous sense of humor? The opening of the movie has just as much action and comedic violence as the TV show did. In the opening of the movie, we see world leaders of the 80s sitting around a table to plot their next terrorist attack. Frank is working undercover, and when he hears them belittling the United States, he breaks his cover and beats them all up. Cause America. Your question is, what does Frank Drebin do to Mikhail Gorbachev? Gorby has a unique place in history during the 80s, and he did a lot to turn around the Soviets' reputation. But in the 80s, the Russians were always the bad guys. It didn't really matter what they did. If you can remember how Frank treated him right now, you'll score 2 points. However, here's a set of multiple choice options to help you. Remember, if you need the multiple choice to get a correct answer, score yourself only 1 point. Is it A, bashed him in the head with a bottle of vodka that was branded with the picture of Ronald Reagan grinning on it? B, got him in a headlock and wiped off Gorbachev's famous birthmark on his forehead? Is it C, he used a corkscrew from his Swiss Army shoe to twirl it up his nose and yanked on it like kids in a car motioning for a truck driver to blow its horn? D, Frank told him he was going to treat him like Yuri Andropov, the Russian premier who was in charge before him, by making him walk to the edge of a cliff and drop off. E, said a bunch of dramatic things to him and punctuated it with a phrase, "And don't call me Shirley."
Question number two.
Nestled in between all the gags of the movie, there is a springtime romance love story between Frank and Jane. After some initial innocent and wholesome flirting...
Nice beaver.
Thank you. I just had it stuffed.
Frank makes his move and asks Jane out to dinner. Your question is, what kind of food do they serve at the restaurant Frank offers to take Jane on their date? It was an unusual style of food on the menu, but if you can remember this punchline right now, you'll score 2 points. However, here's a set of multiple choice options to help you. If you need the multiple choice, score yourself only 1 point. Did the restaurant offer A, Viking food? B, Spartan food? C, ninja food? D, druid food? Or is it E, cleric food? That one's just for my D&D nerds out there.
Question number three.
Question three is a who am I question. I will read you a description of a character in the movie, and you need to tell me the name of the actor who played them. Who am I? I instructed my student in a driving lesson to flip the bird to a rude driver. Who am I? Remember, we're looking for the name of the actor. Director of the movie, David Zucker, always loved to cast serious actors in these kinds of comedic roles. Seeing stars of stage and screen doing absurd comedy against type always made these moments funnier. The Who Am I actor here is the perfect example of this technique of humor. Your 1 point hint here is that despite having a long career built from dramatic roles, his last two movie credits were both comedies, The Naked Gun, and also he played himself as the book narrator in the movie Scrooged with Bill Murray. Here's a bonus hint. He was also Grandpa Stratton in the TV series Silver Spoons. What is that actor's name?
Question number four.
For me, the highlight of the whole movie is the third act at the baseball stadium. I feel like they made the setting at the ballpark for the sole purpose of getting a chance to use every baseball joke they could think up. They parody the wave, ballpark junk food, and they are also responsible for giving us the grossest scene in any Zucker Brothers movie by showing a gratuitous amount of tobacco spitting done at the game, both by the players and their wives.
And this game's underway. Dave Spiewak, ready to face Jay Johnstone.
Judges, we just got done saying how gross that clip was, and you thought it'd be a good idea to play the clip? What's wrong with you? Yeah, jeez. Another baseball trope they touch on is the unusually large number of broadcast crew required to call a game. Your question is, how many play-by-play and color announcers were there in the broadcast booth at the baseball game? If you remember this scene, the broadcasters are all playing themselves and introduced by name, but not all of them are known for their knowledge of baseball. If you know this right now, and it'd be very impressive if you did, but if you're like me, you're going to at best score 1 point for using the multiple choice option. Here they are. How many sports broadcasters are there in the broadcast booth? A, 6. B, 7. C, 8. D, 9. Or is it E, 69.
69, dudes!
And finally, question number 5.
The final question of the round stays in the world of baseball. Kind of. After Frank assaults Enrico Palazzo and assumes his identity to get onto the ball field, he is required to sing the national anthem and does so with varying degrees of success. Here's your question. Which of the following lyrics does Lieutenant Frank Drebin, aka Enrico Palazzo, screw up when singing the Star Spangled Banner at the baseball game in the movie? So you need to pick which option he did not sing during his rendition of the song. A, and the rocket's red glare. Bunch of bombs in the air. B gave proof to the night that we still had a flag. C, oh say does that flag banner wave all over that is free. D, in the home of the land, in the land of the free. Or is it E, all of the above? Frank sings all these lyrics at the game. Your one-point hint here is that we'll play for you the first half of the song, and that might jog your memory a little.
So, ladies and gentlemen, let us honor America as Mr. Palazzo will now sing our national anthem.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hail in the
Frank?
Twilight's black gleaming, whose bright stripes and broad stars in the perilous night on our ramparts we watch.
Now that you've had a little time to think about the questions, here are the answers. In question one, I asked you, what does Frank Drebin do to Mikhail Gorbachev in the opening of this movie? If you said option B, got him in a headlock and wiped off Gorbachev's famous birthmark off his forehead, then you got the correct answer. If option D and that terrible pun about Yuri Andropov sounds familiar, well, that's because it's actually dialogue from an episode of Silver Spoons where Ricky insults the then Russian premier and starts World War III.
The Soviet premier, Yuri Andropov.
No, I'm not removing all warships until you return a love boat. And I want it back in a hurry, Yuri.
What'd you call me?
Oh, yeah?
Well, why don't you just walk to the edge of a cliff, Yuri, and drop off?
There was no escape from the threat of war with the Soviets back in the 80s, even on a kid's show. For question two, I asked you, what kind of food do they serve at the restaurant Frank offers to take Jane on their date? Well remembered if you said option A, Viking food.
I wish there was some way I could repay you. How about dinner? I know this little out-of-the-way place that serves great Viking food.
Leslie Nielsen was 62 when The Naked Gun came out, but he's one of those dudes that looked like he was born in his 60s. Most Gen Xers now are about the same age as he was when he made Airplane. The fact that he looked as old as our grandparents did in 1988 makes the fact that Priscilla Presley's character Jane falling in love with him seem like it was also the most unbelievable thing to happen in this movie. He was 19 years older than her when the movie came out, but the fact that he looks so much older than her kind of makes it hard to suspend disbelief of what's happening on the screen. I mean, who would have thought that someone like Priscilla Presley would find an older man attractive? All right, question three was a who am I question. I asked you to name the actor who was the driving instructor that told his student to flip the bird to the rude truck driver. The correct answer is the great John Houseman, of course.
You damn bird!
Well, Stephanie, gently extend your arm. Extend your middle finger. Very good. Well done.
He had a very distinctive voice and cadence that made his mark for generations of moviegoers. Although he did several comedies over the years, I think everyone will admit that there are comedies, and then there are Zucker Brother comedies. It's a whole other level. I know what you might be thinking. What's with all the Silver Spoon tie-ins to The Naked Gun? It's not on purpose, we promise. It's just a coincidence. However, one must think if it's a coincidence that John Houseman's last movie credit and his first movie credit both involve nudity. His last, of course, being The Naked Gun, and his first movie credit was for the role of Duelist in a film called Too Much Johnson. I would have to assume that he lost that duel, or the movie would be called Too Little Johnson. But I don't know, as I have never seen this movie. Perhaps John Houseman got his start in Hollywood the same as Sylvester Stallone did. I asked you, how many play-by-play and color announcers were there in the broadcast booth at the baseball game? The correct answer was option B, 7.
Hello, everybody. I'm Kurt Gowdy, along with Jim Palmer, Tim McCarver, Dick Vitale, Mel Allen, Dick Emberg, and Dr. Joyce Brothers.
Kurt Gowdy, Jim Palmer, Tim McCarver, Mel Allen, and Dick Emberg all have direct ties to baseball, although I seem to remember Dick Emberg most from hosting the Tournament of Roses parade every year. But Dick Vitale was famous for being an NCAA broadcaster. And finally, we get to the payoff punchline of Dr. Joyce Brothers. Well, you might think that was a punchline to have a world-famous psychologist to be in the sports broadcast booth, but you'd be wrong. When Dr. Joyce Brothers was trying to raise a family on $50 a month salary in 1955, she entered as a contestant to a quiz show called The $64,000 Question. It was the largest payout show available in 1955, but the producers would not allow her to answer questions about topics relating to her multiple degrees. In fact, they went out of her way to pick a topic perceived as something that no woman in 1955 would know about, boxing. Unbeknownst to them, her husband was a huge boxing fan, so she chose that to be her topic. Furthermore, she used her photographic memory to study everything she could on boxing and won the top prize on the show. Winning $65,000 in 1955 would be like winning close to $800,000 today. Not bad when you're living on 50 bucks a month. She loved proving stereotypes wrong so much that she continued to learn about the world of boxing to the point that she was considered an expert on the sport, and her success on the show earned Brothers to be the first female boxing color commentator for CBS and then a co-host of a sports program of her own called Sports Showcase. So next time you see this movie thinking that Dr. Joyce Brothers is some kind of a punchline in this scene, know that she belongs there just as much as Dick Vitale does.
Baby, it's going to be awesome!
Which lyrics does Frank screw up when singing the Star-Spangled Banner? One could argue that he screwed all of them up, and we would agree with that thought. So option E, all of the above, is the correct answer. I've seen this movie so many times, it's hard for me to not sing Frank's version when at a ball game. So sing it if you know it. Coming up in round three of the challenging stage is our guest host segment. But before we do that, let's hear a quick word from our sponsor.
Stay tuned for more Police Squad.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to six guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, have you thought about giving us a positive review on the podcast platform you found us? We found listeners who have on Apple Podcasts, and Movie Mama Mia writes, "Just can't get enough." As a proud and sometimes reluctant member of Gen X, I was very happy to find this podcast. Lots of 80s joy and memories, equal parts silly, smart, and stressful when I don't have the answer. If you like trivia and waxing nostalgic, this show is a must listen. Thanks, Movie Mama Mia. Reviews like this really help others find our show, so please spread the word about the podcast, and your review might end up on an episode just like Movie Mama Mia's was. We look forward to reading what you think about the show. Thanks so much.
So who's gonna save a generation? Are you gonna save a generation? Who will save Generation X?
Be sure to tune in next week for another exciting story from the files of Police Squad.
Round 3.
I am the guy who normally asks the questions, but in this segment, we're going to turn things around and have one of our listeners ask the questions to see if I can do my part to save Generation X. Our special guest host comes to us via our answer machine, so let's crank up that answer machine and see what we got. Just as a reminder, I have not heard these questions yet, and this part always makes me nervous, but let's see who reached out.
Message 1.
Hello, Zabe. This is Lori, creator and co-host of the Accelerated Culture podcast about 80s and 90s, new wave and alternative music. I'm also a professor of computer information systems, and I'm here today to ask you some trivia questions about the classic 1995 film Hackers, starring Angelina Jolie, Johnny Lee Miller, and Matthew Lillard. Are you elite? Prove it with the correct answers to these 5 questions.
Well, I know that's not one of the questions, but I can definitely answer the question of am I elite or not on the movie Hackers. And I am absolutely not elite. I've seen that movie once in my life. Oh boy, this could go terribly wrong. Hackers falls in the far end of Gen X movie as far as the timeline goes. We typically stick between 1970 and 1995. So I think this came out around 94 or 95, if I'm not mistaken. And I know Lori's a computer nerd, so she's probably going to stick it to me hard on this. But I think Hackers is fair game because I think Gen Xers were still the target audience for this movie, or at least the young Gen Xers were. This movie's probably equal parts for millennials or Gen Xers. So judges, is Hackers fair game on the show?
Fight the planet!
Damn it. I was hoping to get out of answering these because I don't remember much about Hackers, but we'll give it our best go. All right, let's hear question number 1.
Question number 1. What is the name of the virus that the hackers were being blamed for infecting the Gibson with?
So what I remember of this movie is how hilarious the actual computer programming was. Everything was so visual, and every computer program had graphics attached to it as well. Not to mention the movie magic of computing, which is every time something happens on the screen, it makes a sound effect or a bleep or a blurp. It's hilarious. Computers don't actually make those sounds, even back in the 90s. But I guess when you're making a movie, you got to make it as engaging as you can for the audience. Watching keystrokes on screen doesn't really excite people, I suppose. And even War Games gave Joshua a voice, so I'm not going to throw too many rocks at it. But what I remember of this specific virus was they put a kind of an AI face to it, which looked like, I don't know, if the Predator was looking at Michael Hutchins from NXS. That's the face that I'm seeing. But I do remember the name of this, and it was the Da Vinci virus, I'm pretty sure.
Question number 2. What beverage do Razor and Blade claim is the soft drink of the elite hacker?
This also fell into a timeline when product placement was rampant in movies. And they were pretty shameless, too. I remember there being a lot of Coke cans and Coke product placement in this. But I also remember specifically Jolt Cola being advertised on this show. So it's either Coke or Jolt. And I think it makes more sense to say Jolt than Coke, because Coke is too mainstream and Jolt would be a little bit more edgy and cool and hip. Like every single person in this movie are. The aesthetics of this movie are so over the top. You can't be just some dude in a t-shirt and jeans and glasses, which is probably the aesthetic of most computer aficionados back in the 90s. But everything had to be cool, and Coke isn't quite so cool, so I'm going to go with Jolt. Yeah, because they stayed up like all night hacking and stuff, so they would need a high caffeine content from Jolt. And because Monster Energy drink didn't exist back then, it's got to be Jolt.
Question number 3. When Dade is allowed to use a computer again on his 18th birthday, he takes over a television station. What show does he play?
Well, if you're trying to get me to miss a question, you could have just ended with what is the name of the character who was banned from using a computer until he was 18 because I couldn't remember that his name was Dade. I just remember him as Zero Cool. And he had another one. What was that one? Burn Override or Override Burn or something like that. I can't remember. They're all names that sounded really cool to 13-year-olds in 1995. But as far as the television show, oof. See, I remember them having a like pirate TV show that they would put in from like the two Asian dudes. They're like Snip and Snipe or
Razor and Blade.
Cut and Paste or Suck and Blow. I can't remember.
Razor and Blade.
They had some cutesy name together because the two Asian dudes, Snip and Snipe or whatever their names were.
Razor and Blade.
They were teaching people how to do hacking and they did the trick with the telephone where you could record the sounds of the coins going in or whatever and it would make a touch tone type noise that you could record and play back and get $5 worth of long distance time or whatever. I'd like to think if there were multiple choice options I could figure it out, but I clearly don't know the name of the show, so I'm going to get this one wrong. So I'm just going to go with, I'm trying to think of a show that had prominent Asian characters in it from the Gen X, but really, were there any? Asians were super underrepresented on TV shows back in the day. So I can't even think of a silly answer to give. Really, the only Asian character I can think of that was prominent on a TV show in the Gen X timeline was Arnold in Happy Days. At least that's the first one that comes to mind. And I'm sorry if I'm missing something super obvious, but that's what I'm thinking of. So I'm going to go with Happy Days, the computer hacking show with starring computer handle names Suck and Blow.
Razor and Blade. Question 4. How many computer systems was Dade responsible for crashing when he was 11 years old using the handle Zero Cool? This one might be a little bit tricky, so I'm going to make it multiple choice for you. Was it A, 111, B, 1,337, C, 1,507, or D, 69?
69, dudes!
So this one, I think I remember it, actually, because when he gets in trouble, he says, hey, you crashed 1,500 computers. And then he, like, wryly says back, 1,507. So I'm going to go with 1,507 systems were crashed. There was another option that said 1,357, I think he said. So they both end in 7, so I could be wrong. I could be picking the wrong 7 of the two options, but I'm going to stick with 1,507.
And finally, which British musician and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee has a cameo as a hacker from London?
Oof. This one's much more in your lane, Lori, than mine. I know your show goes deep into the histories and interesting fun facts about musicians and bands of the 90s. I clearly don't know, but I will share that at the end of the movie, there's some shoehorned romance between Zero Cool and Acid Burn, played by Angelina Jolie. And they have this sweet little love song at the end that's totally out of place from all the other kind of techno and electronic music that's played on this soundtrack. And it's so out of place because I recognize the band and is from the band Squeeze, who is a British band. And because it's so out of place, I'm thinking maybe they used the front man from Squeeze to be a cameo as a British hacker. And the lead singer for Squeeze is Glenn something or other. Glenn, hold on, I got it. Glenn Tillamook or Tillabrook something? Tillamook or Tillabrook? I can't remember. Tillamook's the cheese, so it's got to be Tillabrook. Sorry. Sorry, Glenn, if you're listening. So that's what I'm going to go with. I'm going with Glenn Tillabrook, frontman for the band Squeeze, although I can't imagine Squeeze as a Hall of Fame band, although they should be. I love me some Squeeze. That's my best guess.
All right, are you ready for the answers? Number 1, what was the name of the virus that the hackers were being blamed for infecting the Gibson with? That was the Da Vinci virus.
Sweet, 1 for 1. Lori, I'm sure you would also have accepted AI Michael Hutchins, right?
Number 2, what beverage do Razor and Blade claim is the soft drink of the elite hacker? That would be Jolt Cola, which children of the 80s would remember has all the sugar and twice the caffeine.
Oh, I remember Jolt Cola, but I'm such an idiot that I didn't remember that you said the names of the two Asian hacker bros in the freaking question, and I'm sitting here calling them Snip and Snipe and Suck and Blow like a moron. I tell you what both sucks and blows, my short-term memory. I can recall the docking bay number of the Millennium Falcon from Star Wars in 1977, but I can't remember the names that you gave me in the prior question. Boy, that's embarrassing. Judges, whatever you do, when you're editing this episode, please don't do some sound drops that make me look dumb during that whole bit when Lori told me the names of the characters and I instantly forgot them. Thanks, guys. We need to have each other's back on this show.
Razor and Blade. Number 3, when Dade is allowed to use a computer again on his 18th birthday, he takes over a television station. What show does he play? The Outer Limits.
I don't know if I would have got that even with the multiple choice or not. Oh well, 2 out of 3, ain't too bad so far. Let's see if I can get the last two.
Number 4, how many computer systems was Dade responsible for crashing when he was 11 years old using the handle Zero Cool? The correct answer is C, 1,507.
There were 4 options I had to pick from. And if your handle is Zero Cool, you got to pick the option that has the highest number of systems crashed, right? If your handle was Suck and Blow, I think you know the right answer to pick for that one.
Razor and Blade. And finally, which British musician and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee has a cameo as a hacker from London? That would be Dave Stewart of the Eurythmics.
Well, I can't say I'm surprised that I got this one wrong. The only way I would recognize Dave Stewart sitting behind a keyboard and a monitor is if he was programming a drum machine in a British field full of cows.
Thanks again, Zabe, for letting me join you and ask you some trivia questions about this fine, fine film. Be sure to check out Accelerated Culture on the web at acceleratedculturepodcast.com and hack the planet.
End of messages.
Hack the planet indeed, Lori. Thank you so much for sending in your submission and taking over the guest host chair for this episode. Those were some really great questions about a movie we've never talked about on the podcast. I mean, there's maybe a reason why we've never talked about it on this podcast, but all the same, representation matters. Young Gen Xers and maybe our millennial listeners, they need some movies that speak to them as well. So thanks for saving hackers from being forgotten. Listeners, please take a moment to check out the show notes for this episode, and you'll find a link to Accelerated Culture Podcast. If you like fun facts like the Eurythmics question that she asked us on this episode, then you will love her show. It's full of all kinds of interesting facts about the bands that you love from Generation X, and maybe even a few bands that you hate, too. Why not? Please give her show a listen. Thanks again, Lori. I really appreciate you. If you would like to try your hand in guest hosting this segment and share your trivia knowledge of the fun things of Generation X, just like Lori did here, then send the judges an email at whowillsavegenx@gmail.com. Or even better, go to our website at whowillsavegenx.com and leave us a message. Just tap that blue microphone icon on the lower right part of your screen and let's talk about it. It's free to use and your voice might be used on an upcoming episode of the show. But even if you have just a thought of how you're feeling about the show or something you want our listeners to know about, maybe our 2 British listeners for that matter, you could just leave us a message on the answer machine, and we might play those too. Just remember, this is a family-friendly show. So let's hear what you have to say and share your Gen X voice on the show. But really, anything you have on your mind about the show, our generation, or whatever you want to share with us and our listeners are fair game on the answer machine. We're hoping that you'll reach out and just say hi.
Reach out and touch someone.
Well, that's it for this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We would like to once again thank guest host Lori for sending in those fun questions and encourage you to check out her show called Accelerated Culture Podcast. Thanks for listening to The Challenging Stage. We welcome you to share it with that special Gen Xer in your life and subscribe to the show for future episodes where we will once again ask the question, who will save Generation X? Later.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.